Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by the wonderful Anika Allen. Anika is a serial entrepreneur, co-founder of the Black Magic Awards, D&I expert, that's diversity and inclusion. She's also a mother of a very sweet little girl, and she is a fellow Brummie. Anika, thank you so much for joining us today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
I don't know if I can do anything more justice than you've just done. I think you've said it all, but I also host an award-winning podcast called the Black Magic Podcast. And recently contributed to a book called Hairvolution, where you can kind of read my hair journey. And yeah, I do all things kind of D&I, and looking forward to kind of the 2022 Black Magic Awards.
Yeah, Anika, this is the thing. This is one of the things that I love about Anika, and we're going to get into this over the course of this conversation. So as I mentioned in that intro, Anika is a fellow Brummie. We both lived at one time together at the same point in our lives in London. Never crossed paths until we met at, I think, a Black Magic event a few years ago. And I kind of went up to Anika. She was very heavily pregnant then. And I went up to her and introduced myself because I was like, this woman is incredible. I've been following her on various social media platforms or following her work and her project. And one of the things that I always loved most about Anika was how unassuming she is, and her sense of humility. As you can hear in that intro, Anika is a real powerhouse, hence why I wanted her on the podcast, because I think it's important to kind of introduce to the other rainmakers a real rainmaker and someone who has been one for a number of years. But as you heard from her just then, you know, she's so understated. So Anika, in my opening question to you, you know, as I say here, you're a brilliant example of someone who exemplifies this idea of a multi-hyphenate career. You straddle these two distinctive worlds. So obviously there's the corporate world, but also in your endeavors as a creative entrepreneur. Was that intentional? You know, did you always set out to kind of have this very kind of multifaceted career doing lots of different things?
I definitely would say it wasn't intentional. I knew I was always a creative. I guess from the age of 8, I remember watching Newsround and sitting there saying, oh, I'm going to be a TV presenter like they are on Newsround. And I'm going to go to, I don't know, Iraq and go to a war zone and report on what's happening to families over there. I think at that point, I didn't realize I could have actually, you know, be blown up or die, kidnapped in that situation. As I got older, I realized that was the case. I was like, maybe I'll stick to print. and just always loved writing and telling stories. And I was very much as a child, I'd watch the news, watch various things on TV. And the depictions I would see, particularly of the Black community, were always not representations that I would recognize. I was like, no, none of the friends or family I have, you know, remind me of any of these people. And it would always be negative. And so one of the things I always wanted to do was kind of champion those voices that are not usually heard, and those stories that aren't usually told in those mediums. And I think just the passion for doing that kind of propelled me forward and propelled me into a life as a journalist initially. And I kind of focused on music, entertainment, culture, lifestyle, entrepreneurs, writing for various magazines and newspapers, from the likes of Pride to The Voice to Birmingham Post to The Guardian, different publications over the years. And then wanting to tell that story in a different medium, so I migrated into TV production and worked on a lot of kind of reality, entertainment and documentary formats. But having, I guess, a career in TV, I kind of got to, I guess, a glass ceiling at the time, because it's very different. The industry hasn't changed that much, but it's still improved on what it was then. And I'm just trying to get to that next level, I found really, really hard. And so I decided, okay, well, actually, where can I utilize my TV skills and journalism skills. And so at that point, worked with an old business partner, and we launched a publication with Flavor Mag, which was a really popular youth lifestyle publication at the time that was going for about 8 years. And then after that, kind of utilized again those skills in the communication space, working for the various brands in various sectors for them to hone their social media and to hone the content that's on their platforms and to look at their strategies for communication. So yes, I have done a kind of number of initiatives, number of activities, worked for various organizations, but it was never planned. I think I thrive on variety, I thrive on creativity. And so I think because of that, it just, I never stuck to one place for that long.
Yeah, and that, I think, you know, that kind of intellectual curiosity and your really creative spirit, that definitely comes out in the work that we see that you produce. And one of the things that really struck me, and one of the reasons that, I was really keen to get you on the podcast and have a conversation with you, was, you know, even though, you know, when you look at the work that you do, whether it's the Black Magic Awards, obviously you've talked about your journalism background and that curiosity that you have, always trying to uncover new things, but also this constant focus on inclusion, or amplifying, particularly when it comes to Black British culture, amplifying voices, and people that maybe typically hadn't always been included. And I saw that, you know, you did a talk very recently, I think you did a keynote speech, or you moderated a discussion at the Black Business Show in 2021. And in it, you know, you talked about the importance of inclusion and why, you know, we really need to take steps as individuals to think about how we can create, carve out our own spaces, and where opportunities don't exist, almost create them for ourselves. Can you elaborate a bit more on that and you know, how that kind of thread has woven its way through your work and career to date?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I said, from the beginning, I've always been interested in amplifying those voices. And I think that's resonated through every single role that I've done. So currently I work in diversity and inclusion. And again, that was about kind of representation and building inclusive workplaces and ensuring that kind of those underrepresented groups are having a seat at the table and getting their voices heard in spaces and places that they normally wouldn't be seen or have access to. And, you know, I guess one thing I always noticed throughout my career, it was I was always often one of the only people that looked like me in the room, being a woman, being Black. And so,
yeah, that sounds familiar to me too.
Exactly. And kind of being a Black professional and trying to build and sustain a career in, you know, the creative industries, you know, it's hard, particularly in some places have been unwelcoming, during my career. But then obviously then it's about finding those allies and finding my tribe that has kind of, I guess, kept me connected to the industry. And so I've always just wanted people to thrive in their career and be able to elevate no matter what their dimension of difference is, but particularly Black people, just because obviously I'm Black and I know what we face as a community. And in that speech that I did at at the UK Black Business Show, you know, I mentioned, you know, growing up, I wanted to read books, watch blockbuster films and see television shows about, you know, happy, ambitious Black women, you know, just living, falling in love, killing it in their careers, building businesses and just loving their lives kind of in a world that loves them back. And, you know, I didn't see that, you know, when I said at the beginning that, you know, I wanted to be a TV presenter, I said that, but I never saw anybody that looked like me at that time that was a TV presenter. So, and I think it wasn't only till June Sarpong came out that I was like, oh my God, there's a Black woman that I can relate to.
Yes, I remember June
presenting.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, there was not anybody else that I could relate to. I think I was just lucky that I had the kind of mom where she didn't limit my belief. She didn't say if I said I wanted to go to space, she'd be like, okay, well, you better go and learn how to fly. And so me saying I want to be a TV presenter, she would never limit that and say, no, you can't do that. She'd be like, I don't know how you do that, but if you can figure it out, I'm sure you can make it happen. And so I think having a parent like that helped me to be able to know that, you know, I could pursue anything and not be deterred if I failed, because there was nobody, you know, like my mom wouldn't have been like, she'd have just been, her phrase was, anytime I tried anything, You know, if I play netball, so if I played a netball game and we lost, you'd be like, clearly the better team won. You better train harder for next time. And it would be the same with, you know, with jobs or anything that I wanted to do. Like, if I didn't get the job, well, I guess work harder at the interview next time, or try somewhere else. Maybe that just wasn't the right fit for you. It wasn't meant to be. And so I was never afraid to try new things and to go new places. And so I think, you know, my mum helped with that.
Yeah, I really like that, because what's kind of leaping out at me as you're talking, and I was going to ask you actually where your drive and entrepreneurial streak comes from. And it sounds like, you know, in the messages that you received consistently from your mother, you didn't have this fear of failure, which is a thing that I think plagues us. And it's not unique to women. I think, you know, there are lots of us. One of the things that you hear all the time in the startup space is, you know, fail fast and fail forwards. And, you know, as they try to encourage people to not be afraid to try, because of course, with, you know, such a high rate of failure, in, particularly in the early years as a startup, you know, for a multitude of different reasons, you have to be somebody that's willing to kind of throw your hat in the ring and be like, I'm willing to give it a go, irrespective of what the outcome and the consequences might be. Mm. So as someone, you know, you've talked about your childhood, you've talked about the iconic news round that so many of us grew up on. But, you know, when you think about, you know, more broadly coming from, I mean, did you come from a family of entrepreneurs? I suppose that's the question, really.
No.
What was your background?
No, my mum at the time, she went to university later in life and kind of changed careers. But at the time she was working as a personal assistant. My dad is a mechanic. Yeah, there was nobody immediate in my family that was ever an entrepreneur. I remember when... speaking of childhoods, when I was 11 years old in primary school, so it's last year at primary school, and they decided to do this entrepreneurship competition. So we were the first primary school to enter into this competition. And so they said in the class, everybody get in groups, you all get to decide what your idea is, then you're going to pitch to us and we'll decide who goes forward to the main competition. And I remember saying, come into my group, everybody, because if you're in my group, we're going to win and we're going to go all the way to the competition.
And that sounds like my daughter.
And so I remember coming up with the idea of doing badges. And so they'd given us all a budget. So, you know, hired this badge machine, and then the lunchtime kind of made everybody badges, and then everybody voted who would win. And we won the kind of one in the primary school and then got to go into the main competition. And on the day, we were only one of two primary schools there, and the kind of again had to pitch in front of judges, etc. And essentially we won the whole competition, and we were the first primary school to do that. And we, you know, got a picture taken and featured on the front of the Expression Star newspaper, which is a newspaper in the Midlands. And things. And I remember and at the time being so happy, and looking back on that now, I wish somebody had said to me at the time, you know, this is entrepreneurship, because they never actually used that word. I'm using that word now, but nobody used that word. And then nobody ever nurtured that after and said, oh, you could continue this as a business, Anika, and make money from this. And even some of the things when I think back that I did when I was as a teenager. So when I was 16 and I was finishing school, the school said they didn't have any, because I went to a really, really horrid school. It's not even there anymore because it was so bad. And they said they didn't have any money for us to have a leavers party. So I said, okay, I will make some money for us to have a leavers party. So I got all my friends and said to them, you can sing, you can dance, you can act, whatever. We're doing a talent show, then we're going to charge everybody to come, and then we're going to get parents to come, and we'll make the money for our leavers party. And I did, and I remember making £350. And
that's incredible. Like, I'm literally listening to you open mouthed. Nobody can see me, and I'm just fascinated by this, because I'm always intrigued by the, particularly the schoolboy and schoolgirl entrepreneurs. like where does that spirit come from and that energy? Like, okay, well, you've given me this curveball and I'm going to sort it out. Basically, like, I'm not going to be deterred at all by that.
Basically. And I made this £350, and I remember the head teacher saying, oh, we'll put this in the safe until you're ready to use it. But then I got extra, was that I don't even want to use it at the school for the school. I'm going to find my own venue. And but naughty me found a venue that had a bar and that was selling alcohol, and said we were having an 18th leavers party. And so then I got in trouble because the school found out and they refused to give me the money. So I was so angry. I was like, that's my money. I earned that for our leaders party. How dare you? And but again, I was determined for this to go ahead. So I remember finding a pub that was far enough away from the school for them not to know that I was a school child.
Wow.
And having the leavers party there, but then charging everybody to come so I could afford one to pay the pub and also to pay the DJs and everybody else that needed to be paid. And I remember that day as well. I remember making like £500 and then again having to pay the pub, having to pay the DJs, but then still having money left for me. And again, nobody ever said this is what a promoter does, Anika. You could do this for a living. I didn't even think about that at the time. It just, my goal was just to have a party.
Who even knew that was an option?
Yeah, no, I didn't even know it was an option.
This is crazy to me. And I think, I mean, first of all, it's just that sheer determination. Like, I will not be cowed by whatever's happening here. I'm still going to persevere. But the other thing that's really interesting as you're speaking is I'm thinking for somebody, and you know, they always say there's that fearlessness of youth, or the innocence of youth is what, you know, you didn't know what you didn't know. So you were like, I don't care. Well, what, you know, my objective is to have this party. Your objective at the time wasn't necessarily to turn a profit. It was just, I want to have this party. Me and my friends want to celebrate us leaving school. But it's this relationship between pressure and stress, because, you know, as you get older, of course, you know, there's this, we have this sense of inhibition. You know, we stop putting ourselves out there. We stop wanting to do the courageous thing or the new thing or to try things and to fail. Mm. But in your case, how did you process the feelings of, okay, well, I've already committed to doing this. I've told everybody I know. We want to have this party. Did you feel any sense of pressure knowing that, okay, well, I've got to pay the DJ and I've got to pay the venue and I've got to make sure that people come through the door? Or were you just completely unfazed by it all? And is that something that's carried you through? Have you retained that energy as an adult?
I would say I've definitely retained that energy as an adult in terms of the pressure. So I had pressure for the venue. Luckily for the DJs at the time, I got my one of my older brothers and my uncle DJed. And so I said to them, come down and DJ. If I make money, you get paid. If I don't make money, then you're my uncle, my brother. So you do it for free. But if I make money, then you'll see money. And I think that's what's taken me. So anytime I've ever done an event, I kind of, you know, I'll look at the cost, I'll do my budget and things and look at what I need to make to break even and then what I need to do to make a profit. And my thing has always been kind of, I never spend more than I can afford. You know, if I've got sponsors in, if we've got partnerships in, if we've sold great, lots of tickets, great. But ultimately I kind of look at, this is the minimum I want to spend and see what I can make happen with that. And I'm resourceful as well. I think a lot of things in life, you know, are a result of relationships. So say with when I was 16 doing that party, yes, I got my uncle and my brother to DJ. But again, I think with anything I've ever done in life, it's having nurtured and built relationships over time with different people. I can reach out to people to help with things where if I, you know, I always want to pay people, but if I don't know what that will be at the beginning, then people will still say yes, because I've built a relationship with them and they know that they can trust what I say, that, you know, if it's there, they're going to get it. If not, and if they don't get it, they'll get it another time from me, because there'll always be something else that I'll work and that I'll involve them in.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing is, like, you know, we talk all the time, or, you know, it's not a word that's trending as much anymore. But, you know, back in the day, they used to talk quite a lot. Certainly when I was, you know, coming out of university and just starting my career, it was all this talk about networking. There was this real fixation on, you've got to network, you've got to go to these events, you've got to build relationships with these people. And it all felt really empty. And kind of in some ways, it felt calculated and really inauthentic to me. And although I wouldn't have been able to articulate it in that way when I was 22 or 21, starting my first graduate job, I never really gelled with the idea of just going to these massive corporate networking events and trying to identify who I thought were the power people and trying to befriend them if there wasn't a reason why I would want to strike up conversation with them ordinarily.
Yeah.
And so what you're talking about is, you know, just building these really organic relationships over the course of your life, really, and knowing that even if you weren't in a position to pay them or, you know, remunerate them financially, that ultimately, because of the integrity that you'd built through those relationships, you could always make a trade, couldn't you? Mm. It's like trading, whether it's time or resources or energy.
Exactly.
And they know those people are kind of invested in the projects as well. You know, any, you know, the businesses that you were building. So they'd be like, even if Anika can't pay me, I'm there. And I have friends like that right now who anything that they're doing, if they email me and say, you know, Dav, I need you to run a workshop, I don't think to ask about money. Of course, they're my friends, but lots of them, they are professional friends, they're professional connections. But because I believe so wholeheartedly in what they commit to doing and the good that I know that they're going to do, I will say yes. So it sounds like that's the kind of, you know, those are the relationships that you cultivate as well.
Definitely. And also you have to remember, I started my career as a freelance journalist and worked in TV production, which is a industry where it's, you know, the freelance, you have to be highly networked to get, you know, to get an article in a newspaper, to get that next gig in TV production. If you're not networked, then you're not going to get that call to get that next job. And so you have to build and facilitate those relationships. And so I think I learning it in that industry has helped drive me as an entrepreneur. And even in the workplace today, just when I think about my day-to-day role in D&I and things, and some of the things I make happen, you know, is because, again, internally I've built up that network and have built up those relationships so that if I need something done, I know who the colleagues are that I can go to help resource that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the word, like almost the kind of magic word across everything that you've said outside of the relationships, of course, is that sense of resourcefulness, which I really like, because it's one that it's just it kind of spans all sorts of different things, doesn't it? In life and in business and everything else. What can you do? You know, taking nothing at all and turning it into something, which I think is a really powerful quality.
I think that's exactly what Kodra and Nim and I did with when it came to the Black Magic Awards as well. You know, the first Black Magic Awards we did, I think we said in the June that we wanted to do an award ceremony, and by the October we'd done our first ceremony, had likes of Judy Love presenting an award, had Stormzy come down and present an award. And so, and, you know, and that was within a couple of months with with just kind of us using our contacts, our resourcefulness and our time and energy to make that happen.
I think, you know, so just, I mean, this isn't a question that I'd planned for, but I'm interested from a personal perspective, and I hope that others listening will be interested in this too. There is something about that speed as well, that speed of execution, you know, particularly as an entrepreneur. Sometimes we can, and we do this, whether we are entrepreneurs or whether we, you know, we have, or in our professional lives outside of entrepreneurship, we do this thing where you can kind of overcalculate, overanalyze, and then in the end you do nothing. And I've talked before even about doing this podcast, you know, saying that this was something that I'd wanted to do for, you know, a number of months at the start of the year. You know, we turned the, you know, the corner on 2021, and I was like, right, this year one of my objectives is to launch a podcast. You know, having these kind of, you know, rich conversations with really powerful, interesting, diverse women is something that I love to do, even in my personal life. So I'm like, it's not at all difficult for me to reach out and connect with people that I really admire and that I really like, and to get them onto the podcast and have these conversations. But it took me from me kind of, you know, this being a germ of an idea in January through to autumn. I mean, we're in Q4 2021 and having this conversation. It took me a very long time to get out of my own way. Is that something that you see, you know, just generally based on your observations, you know, the difference between those people that are making things happen and those that are kind of stuck in this paralysis stage? Is it just, you know, this idea that you just have to do something rather than, you know, waiting to get everything lined up and to strive for this perfection constantly, which is a trap that I find myself in at times?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in planning. So don't get me wrong, I'll do things at speed, but I'll always map out what it is that I want to do. And I think sometimes some of us can get in our own way by thinking about things too much. And it's like, well, how long do you need to think? Just do it, you know, as I said. And I think that comes back to the fear of failure. What we were talking about earlier. But I think some people are scared of failure, scared of what other people will say, or, you know, things not working out how they want to. So they're kind of paralyzed by either not doing it, or they said overthinking it and wanting everything to be perfect, that pursuit of perfection. And because it's not perfect, they haven't started. And sometimes you just need to get started. Just dive in, start making things happen, and, you know, listen, learn, iterate, and and then see what's working, what doesn't. And I think that's what happens in business. You know, sometimes you just have to pivot and try new things, and some things work, some things don't. But if you don't try anything, then ultimately somebody else will go past you with a similar idea or that idea, and they would have got more traction because you've been waiting.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, how many of us can see, like, it's so funny, if you have conversations with anyone, it's like everybody's got a book in them. Everybody's got a business idea in them. And how many people will be like, yeah, I had the idea for Deliveroo, or I had the idea for Uber. Do you know what I mean? And so although it sounds, you know, it sounds crazy to think it, I think there are lots of us that can attest to this idea of not doing anything at all and therefore achieving, you know, obviously not the outcome that we would hope for. So that's really great advice. So just changing tack slightly and focusing on your relationship with money. And obviously, you know, this podcast is all around, and Raincheck, you know, Raincheck exists to help women build sustainable long-term wealth and to open up the conversation about money. How would you describe your relationship with money? And what would you say have been the biggest influences on that relationship?
I think most people, when it comes to their relationship with money, if they look back, I think their influences are from their life growing up, their parents or the people that they're immediately around. I think that influences the majority of people's relationship when it comes to money. And I would say I don't have a negative relationship with money, but I'm definitely trying to cultivate a more positive relationship with money. I'd say I'm in that neutral space. Growing up, I would say my mom, she was very much a, you know, you don't need credit cards. If you haven't got the money for it, then you don't buy it, kind of thing. So why I say I don't have a negative relationship is because I would never get into debt, because I guess my mom always said, why are you spending something on a credit card if you haven't got it? Like if you had a credit card, or if you're getting into debt, it should be something like if you're getting a car, or if you're making a big purchase that you really can't afford, but it's something that's necessary. Otherwise, save for it and then buy it. And so I think that attitude actually helped me through university, because my friends and I, we didn't go into halls of residence. We all just rented a house. There were six of us in this house. And I guess I was the, bookkeeper, or making sure that all the bills were paid, because my mum was the guarantor on the house, and so I didn't want us to get into debt and for my mum to be liable. So I'd be the ones. So I was, you know, set up all the gas, electricity, made sure that we're paying or whatever we needed to pay on time and things. And so I think that helped me to learn budget management, and from my own kind of personal research, I think that's how I learned things like, oh, you know, being on the electoral roll will help. Will help when it comes to your finances and your
credit score.
Yes. Being on the electoral roll will help when it comes to your finances, because it will help your credit score. You know, having a credit card isn't a bad thing as long as you pay it off, because again, that helps with building your credit as well. And so these are things that, you know, I was never taught, so I just had to learn myself. But I think what I was taught was not to create bad habits with when it comes to debt. And so I think that's been helpful throughout my life when it comes to money. So when I say I want to cultivate more positive habits now, I want to kind of get more into investing. I want to learn how I can maximize my income and the things that I should be doing with money for the better, and to build that generational wealth for my family. So that's the things that I'm interested in when it comes to moving forward with my finances.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, like lots of us, you know, I suppose there's two parts to it. The first part is, you know, when we think about lots of us, our relationship with money, of course, it stems from childhood. Lots of the beliefs that we inherit come from, you know, the parents or other adults that surrounded us when we were growing up. And you absorb these things, you know, almost by osmosis. You know, one of the things we talk about quite a lot at Raincheck, and, you know, you'll see it across the personal finance world, is that, you know, these ideas of money mindset. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in a household that you know, we had a more abundant leaning? Was there a scarcity mindset leaning? We talk about the different money scripts and, you know, the basically the habits and behaviors that you exhibit as a result of what you observed growing up. And so those things that you carry forward into your own adult life, if you're not kind of money conscious or aware of the things that you're doing, you know, we can quite easily perpetuate things, whether positive or negative, that happened in our childhood. So I think, you know, everything that you describe about, having to be somebody that, because, you know, particularly because, you know, your mom was the guarantor on the house, that gives you an added incentive to make sure that everything is in order. But some of the things that you were able to glean as a result of that journey and having to be almost, you know, the leader, it's like being the kind of house mom when it came to the bills and being just, you know, helping, you know, manage everything so that things were always in line. But I think, you know, one of the questions that I have, or one of the lines of, I guess, discussion that I wanted to have with you was around the influence of kind of, you know, these maternal role models or just female role models in your life, and particularly as a mother of a daughter yourself. You know, you've talked quite a lot about the influence of your mother in lots of the different things that you've done in terms of your mindset, your almost your confidence, your sense of self-confidence, which to me sounds like was something that was innate. But with, you know, none of us can say that, you know, there's no such thing in my mind as self-made in its purest sense, because to me, you know, even those people, of course, you work your ass off to achieve whatever it is that you achieve. But lots of us come from backgrounds in which, even if there wasn't a lot of money, then we had a lot of encouragement. We had a lot of positive reinforcement, which it sounds like you had. And so I just wonder now, as a mother yourself, are you conscious of wanting to teach her specific lessons based on, you know, your experience growing up in business or about money? Or are you happy for her to find her own way?
Oh, definitely going to be teaching her. I want her to know very early on the power of money, how to save, how to invest. You know, I want to, you know, learn all those lessons so I can impart that wisdom on her. You know, making sure that I'm saving for her from now, looking at what are the things that I could be doing to invest in to make her money go further. And, you know, if she exhibits traits of entrepreneurship, because again, I won't push her into something that she doesn't seem like she's interested in. But if it looks like, actually, you know, this girl can be an entrepreneur and she's got ideas and things, you know, I will help to elevate and amplify that. And so I definitely want to make sure that I put her in a better position than I was. And I think, you know, as I said, even though my mom didn't know anything about kind of investing or credit and things, I said, I think some of the things that she learned was from her mother. I think the savings part in particular, because my nan, I remember when my mom said she got married, and when she got married, her nan gave her like a book, and the book had you know, had X amount of money, and I can't remember how much that was, but a decent amount of money for her and her husband when they were moving into their first home to buy everything they needed. And she'd saved, so any birthdays, any, you know, christening, just everything, any money that my mum got over the years, my nan had saved that and not given it her to use and spend frivolously, and saved it for this point and gave it to my mum to use at that point. And so I think that's where she got her saving money mindset from, hence why then she's passed that kind of, I guess, saving money mindset onto my sister and I.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I love the idea of this kind of through the generations, these great matriarchs just kind of passing the baton forward, and it's kind of, you know, builds momentum as it goes, doesn't it? It's like a snowball effect. So, you know, your grandma had some really great tenets of kind of money management and financial discipline really already established, and then she passed that forward to your mom, who passed it forward to you and your sister, and now you can pass it on to your daughter, which I think is just a great thing and a really beautiful metaphor almost for what life should be, you know, every generation doing better than the last. So Anika, with everything that you've done so far in your career and in your business, like you must have had so many incredible experiences. And one of the things that we talk about, I mean, you touched on investing and investing up for yourself and investing on behalf of your daughter. But one of the things that I always say to the Rainmakers is, when we talk about investing, as much as, of course, you know, my background is investment management, so I talk all the time about investing in financial instruments because we know that on balance, they outperform cash saving. But outside of that, and I guess, you know, sitting above that even, when we talk about investing, I always say we are our biggest investment by far. So we as individuals, everything that we do to kind of nurture our mindsets, to improve our health, our emotional well-being, our knowledge bank and everything like that is an investment in ourselves. So what would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself? You know, it could be anything at all that's straddling any of those things, whether it's your professional development, personal development, in business, in life, anything at all.
I'd probably say definitely my professional development and things, you know, the cost of university, the cost of doing some of the smaller courses that that I've done. So currently I work in diversity and inclusion. And so prior to that, you know, my background's in communications and marketing, but I've always kind of enjoyed the D&I space. You know, I've done events for women that wanted to work in music, media and tech. I've doing the Black Magic Awards for the change makers and trailblazers in the Black community. But I wanted to, you know, have even more of an impact in that space within workplaces and building inclusive environments. And so, but I knew to do that, I couldn't just step into that line of work. So, you know, I paid and did a course on diversity and inclusion so I could learn more about that space before applying for roles. And then got my current one, which is in financial services, doing diversity inclusion. And so I think that investment in terms of time and money to do that is, it wasn't the biggest, but it was, you know, important in terms of my next step. In terms of other things that I've invested in, I'm not afraid to invest in the businesses that I've done. You know, when I started the magazine back in the day, you know, that was of my own time, my own money to get that started before we were getting the advertisers in, before we were getting the sponsors in for events and things. That's me taking that gamble. When Kodra and I started the Black Magic Awards, we didn't say we're not going to do this because we haven't got any sponsors on board initially. We just said if we need to cover it from our own pocket, then we will make this happen regardless. I mean, we were blessed enough to work with some great sponsors that covered the cost of that, but we weren't afraid to put our own money where our mouth is. And I think that's probably my biggest investment is myself and the things that I want to do. I'm not afraid to kind of utilize my own income to get off the starting blocks before making money.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a great lesson, isn't it? This idea that you've got to back yourself. So many of us, you know, we seek that validation externally before we will even think of backing ourselves. But, you know, one of the things that I live by and one of the things that I always encourage my daughters to do, even though they're only 7 and 4, is to be their own cheerleader mm-hmm. and to be their biggest cheerleader by far. So that as much as it's lovely to get that, you know, praise from other people, you don't depend on it. You don't depend on it to feel good about yourself, and you don't depend on it in order to take the next step in terms of whatever it is that you set out to do. So that's a great, really great lesson. I was going to ask you to tell us some of the ways that you've made it rain in your life. Obviously, this podcast is called the Let's Make It Rain podcast, which is all about, you know, the rainmakers that are doing great things, being resourceful, bootstrapping where they need to, but just achieving really great outcomes just through sheer will and determination. But you've already given about a gazillion examples of the ways that you've made it rain through your co-founding of the Black Magic Awards, your own award-winning podcast, even as a schoolgirl taking, it's like, making wine out of water, you know, with, you know, creating this party that people wanted to come to and making a profit on this party, even after school had said, you're not having this party, Anika, and we're keeping all the money that you've made. You were still like, no, we are having this party. So you've already given us so many examples and so much inspiration around how you've made it rain in your life. So I suppose my question now is, for people that are listening to this, that are hoping to do the same, what are the factors that have contributed to your success? So what would you say are the personality traits that you embody that have facilitated all of the things that you have achieved? Is there anything that you would point to? I don't know if you've got three qualities or, you know, one maybe, but what would you say the factors that have contributed?
I'd say one, being courageous in the pursuit of your dreams. So not being afraid to try something. And instead, if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't matter. You know, you get a job or you try a new business. Life isn't going to end because something doesn't work out. And I think being courageous in that pursuit has definitely helped me. Building relationships as well. So I think being sociable has been a strength for me, and building those right relationships and connections that are able to help me get my ventures off the ground and or connect me to the right people to make things happen, or to, you know, connect me with a sponsor, connect me with a partner, or just something that I need for my business, and cultivating those relationships as well. Because sometimes when people think about networking, you go into that networking relationship and think, what is it that I can get from someone? And actually, I don't do that. I go into thinking, what can I give? What can I give to you so that
Definitely. So it's a trade.
Exactly. It's a trade. I don't, you know, you don't get something for nothing in this life or world. You know, if what can I do to help and add value or to be of service to those people that I'm networking with? And I think if you go into a networking relationship in that, with that thought in mind, I think that's when there are better outcomes. And just keeping sustaining those relationships over the years. If I think back, it's been over 9 years now since I did the magazine, but still some of those relationships that I cultivated at that time is the reason why I'm able to get certain celebrities down to the Black Magic Awards. Because even though I'm D&I in financial services now, which is far away from the entertainment industry, because of those relationships, I'm able to still get those people that are high up in the entertainment space to an award ceremony. Obviously, yes, Kojo's got his contacts and things as well, which are amazing, but I've got my own as well because of the relationships I've built. So I think definitely being courageous, building those relationships. And what's the last thing I do say to... in order for you to make it rain? I think what you just mentioned in terms of being your biggest cheerleader and being your biggest advocate, if you can't sell your product, if you can't talk about what it is you want to do or what it is that you need, then how's anybody else going to, you know? So perfect that elevator pitch. Don't be afraid to shout about success. Don't be afraid to shout about your successes. I think, particularly in the UK and Britain, you know, sometimes we're kind of like told to kind of like humble ourselves and to not, you know, scream and shout about some of the amazing things that we're doing, you know, whereas the Americans are like, you know, even if they've done something little, it's large. And so, so I think sometimes we need to take on that attitude as well. And even sometimes I talk myself into that and I say to myself, Anika, talk about this work that you've done, because how's anybody going to know that you've done it if you don't mention it at all? You know, you know how people say, if it's, you know, if it wasn't on social media, did it really happen?
And, I know, so true. So
I think not being afraid to let the world know your not being afraid to let the world know the great things that you're doing.
Yes, so we've got three C's, it sounds like. So we've got courage, cultivate relationships, and cheerlead for yourself, which I think is a brilliant place to end this podcast. I've got three quick fire questions for you before we wrap up completely, Anika. So just the first thing that springs to mind, I'm going to pick these questions at random. So the first one is, the book, podcast, or discovery that changed my life is?
A lot of people probably say this, but it's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because I remember you know, learning about financial literacy and independence and building wealth through reading this book and things. And I guess that analogy of a rich dad and a poor dad and the kind of habits you pick up and the money mindset you create because of the differences in upbringing, I think really, really impacted me. And so I think that's one of the things that kind of just increased my knowledge and me wanting to know more when it came to kind of build my financial intelligence.
Yeah, it's a great book and it's a really easy read as well. It's a nice kind of whiz through book. So yeah, great recommendation. And then my final question, you know, we've talked before, anybody that follows the Rain Check feed, you'll know that I'm always particularly delighted when we do any post on the F Off Fund. What is your F Off Fund for? So for anybody listening, your F Off Fund is basically like your running away fund. Lots of people have different phrases for the same thing. But Anika, what is yours for?
Mine would be for if I'm not happy with the work that I'm doing or the workplace that I'm working in, for me to stop that and to take the time to kind of pursue something else. I'm a big believer in, you know, being somewhere where you can be your authentic self and feel like that you belong and that you're happy. It feeds your soul, because if it's not, then I don't want to be there. And so my FF fund is to make sure Amen. That I'm in, I'm happy and I'm in the right space to utilize my unique talents and skills.
Brilliant. Love that response. Anika, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you if they would like to find out more or connect with you?
And they can connect with me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook at Anika Allen. That's A-N-N-I-K-A-A-L-L-E-N. So yeah, everywhere at Anika Allen. And I'm always happy to kind of connect.
Awesome. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.